All right, Toddcast take two. Yay.
Hey, everybody. Brian and John here.
Sorry. Hold on. I'm going to pull up
the
website on here.
But, his Mac crashed and we lost like...
For the first time in like 12 years, my Mac crashed.
Like 20 minutes of podcasts.
So. Not even. Maybe 10 minutes.
No.
All right.
We were going for a while.
So anyway, I'm going to do a short... I'm going to do an abbreviated version of the stuff we did before because we kind of rambled on it. So
we
weekend we had some good, we had some Grand Prix trials. They were pretty good. Not a lot of penalties. Good times. But they were standard for Indianapolis this weekend, or this coming weekend. Yeah. Not this weekend. Next
September
weekend.
September 5th.
The first weekend of September. The 5th.
Yes.
Two big events. One, Magic the Gathering Grand Prix Pittsburgh trial here at the Mills.
Yes. Come on out and compete.
Modern. Last time we had one for Pittsburgh, we had almost 60 players. I would love to top that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be amazing.
Yes, it would.
For more information on gaming events, check out the gaming events tab on the website or the regular events. They're actually listed in there now. They have all the information for prize payout, for admission, and all kinds of fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The day after... Oh, sorry. Same day.
Same day.
Same day.
It's going to be crazy here.
Free graphic novel day. We do it twice a year. This year, we've loaded it with a whole bunch of new cool things,
mm-hmm.
like some Archie books, like Sonic the Hedgehog and Mega Man. There's some awesome Marvel hardcovers I saw. What else did I see? Like, I was just like, man, this is way better than last time. but all the stores have a little bit different selection. So if you're going to go to a store, don't expect to find the same selection. But it's pretty cool. Like, you keep, just for walking in the door, every single person that comes in that day gets one off the table.
Right.
Now, remember, it's only the ones on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you buy any other one in the store. I don't care if you buy a $3 $3 manga. You buy one of the $5 or $10 trades at C3. Like, you buy a full price. You buy a freaking hardcover. You buy an omnibuy. I don't care what you want to buy. You can buy another one off the table for $5. You get another free one off the table.
Yep.
For every one you buy.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty awesome.
It is.
So, like, I remember last year, we have this guy who comes into the Mills. His name's Randy. We call him Trade Paperback Guy. He's pretty awesome. And he comes in, like, every single Saturday and buys, like, 12 graphic novels. So, it was like Christmas for him because he came in and he ended up with, like, close to 30 graphic novels.
Nice.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I think we had to give him like a long box to hold them all in and stuff. Yeah.
I think I carried it to his car.
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome. But it's a good day to come out, hang out. If you're playing in the Grand Prix trial at the Mills, at least you have something to read in between rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Look at it that way. Then the day after that, come out to Cranberry. Ken and I are going to cook hot dogs. I'm going to wear my Green Lantern apron again. If you like free hot dogs and a whole bunch of deals,
mm-hmm. like, including the big one on the shirts, tell them.
Yeah.
That.
So the biggest one, that's crazy. We've never done this before, but they have a whole ton of shirts that we need to get rid of out there because they just don't have a lot of space,
mm-hmm.
and they want to get new shirts. So we're gonna do $5 a shirt for the first time ever. So if you want to come out and get a $5 shirt and a free hot dog, I will be there hanging out.
And this is Cranberry.
Cranberry. So then. Then it gets better. We're going to have about 50 to 60 long boxes out front for a buck a piece that have never been seen anywhere.
You
not even
a buck a piece, the issue is not the full
yeah,
long
yeah,
box.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, sorry, sorry.
Yeah, watch how you say
that. Dollar comics for a buck a piece.
Right.
50 to 60 long boxes that have never been touched by anyone. They've never been out in Elwood. They've never been out in Mills.
Wow.
Nowhere. Brand new 50 boxes, never been anywhere.
You can actually find something special in there.
The last time we had them, like, some dudes found some really good stuff. I was really impressed. 30% off back issues, 20% off Silver Age, 10% off toys, graphic novels, gaming, and statues. Oh, and the website is wrong. All the t-shirts are $5. and it's going to be nuts. Like, last time it was packed. Like, that place was bumping.
Mm-hmm.
We're also doing a HeroClix event at noon and a Magic Draft, I think, starts at 4. And the draft is for From the Vault Angels, if I remember right. So if you have anybody that's interested that can't make it to the Grand Prix trial or wants to try to win a From the Vault Angels, tell them to come out. Totally fun. Lots of fun. I'll be hanging out all day. I'll probably be out back cooking most of the day, mm-hmm. but I'm there hanging out. Okay, so the weekend after that, Wizard World Pittsburgh.
September 11th.
So this is going to be nuts. Like, Rob Liefeld's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, holy cow, it's freaking Rob Liefeld. Like, it was cool. Ed Pisker, who just won an Eisner for Hip Hop Family Tree, is going to be there. A lot of good guys that we know, a lot of fun guys. So definitely check it out. Jason David Frank's band apparently is playing at Altar Bar that weekend.
Interesting.
Right? I'm kind of intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know we are helping host a party at the Toonzeum on Friday night.
Okay.
We're going to have dollar books there, and we're going to have it's going to be catered, like finger sandwiches. But it's going to be this cool, like, Toonzeum thing. Which is like three blocks from the David L. Lawrence, if that.
Right.
So go check that out. And Saturday night, there is a party that Steel Man is throwing. It is at Cheerleaders. I will just leave it at that.
Right.
But apparently there is live karaoke.
Oh.
Which actually is kind of cool. And I kind of want to be like, dude, come on, I'll play guitar for some Kiss song. We'll just do this. Yeah. Even though I don't like those kind of clubs, I will totally come out just to play with you and hang out.
Yeah.
So it's a possibility that I may go and do this at a live karaoke.
And back to the Wizard World thing, just so you guys know, all of the stores should have, to some degree, we at the Mills have a full end cap showcasing all of the artists, not all of them, but showcasing artists and writers that are going to be at Wizard World, so that you can grab something off the rack and take it to them to get signed. So we have it labeled so you can see who it is. So it's like, oh, Ron Friends. Oh, let me grab this Spider Girl off the end cap here, and I'll take it to him and get him signed at Wizard World. So,
right.
You know, come on out and grab something and take it with you to Wizard World.
Yeah. Jim Ruggs is going to be there. We got a lot of his Street Angel book. We got a lot of really cool stuff. We also have stuff that isn't necessarily by the people that are going to be there, but they're characters of them. Like, what's his name? Marsters, James Marsters.
Yeah.
I can never remember his first name.
Yeah.
I always just want to be like, Spike's going to be there.
Right.
So Spike's going to be there,
yeah.
And we have a pop vinyl of Spike.
Yes.
So that'd be kind of cool in my mind.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah, to have like this little Spike vinyl and be like, hey, look, he signed it. We also have like a couple Firefly action figures that you can have signed. Like, get a Jane. Get a Jane signed.
Yeah.
I almost want to, like, if I could find his character from Chuck as an action figure, I would totally take that. That would be awesome.
That would be pretty cool.
I like that show a lot.
That was a great show.
That was a really good show. Actually, I just rewatched that last year.
Really?
It actually was the first time I watched the whole thing, because like I stopped after a couple seasons when it was originally airing and watched the rest later.
As far as I'm concerned, season 5 doesn't exist. But otherwise, season 1-4 is fantastic.
I didn't mind it, but it was okay.
That whole thing with the amnesia and like losing the entire relationship was just like, really? That's
it was kind of weird, but
the way they ended it was just horrible, you know?
Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. But the amnesia thing was like, meh, whatever. Yeah. It was okay. Anyway. So yeah, then after that, we're heading to Baltimore to hang out at Baltimore Comic Con. It's going to be awesome. Something else that happened last week was the Grim Fairy Tales thing.
Yes.
Is that last week? That was last Wednesday, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Kind of all blurs together.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. So Van Helsing number one versus Van Helsing versus Dracula number one came out.
Mm-hmm.
And Xenoscope came out and hung out in both Century 3 and the Mills for a couple hours each.
I want to say it actually was two.
Was it two? Did we talk about this last week?
Podcast.
Okay. Well, if you haven't checked out the book, definitely check it out. It's actually a pretty good read. I'm starting my graphic novel, and I'll talk about that more later.
Okay.
But it's pretty good. Like, their stuff's gotten a lot better than what it was in like this weird middle section that I remember. That it was like, oh, you're starting to get really thin.
Yeah.
But a lot of their stuff's picked up a lot. It's pretty cool. We all have cool displays for Xenoscope stuff in all the stores. So come check it out. So, all right, let's talk about some books.
All right. Now, let me talk about my first book again.
You can talk about your first book, and we can hear it this time.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe that's what stopped it. Maybe like the
it was like, no, Brian. Like,
that's a horrible book.
No.
You talk about that. So it's called Wolf. It's from Image Comics. Les Cott is the writer, Matt Taylor is the artist, and long and short of it is, it wasn't even so much that I didn't enjoy it. It was just there wasn't anything to enjoy or not enjoy. It's like, it's in a world where paranormal stuff is real, werewolves, vampires, all that stuff. This dude is some kind of, like, cop or something that deals with that. His partner actually has, like, the bottom half of his face is all Cthulhu'd out. It's got, like, big tentacles hanging down. So I don't even know what he is, but, you know. And basically, I didn't understand the book. This is only issue 2, and I have no idea what the premise of the story is and what is going on. And you would think in issue 2 that would still be pretty well telling that.
Right.
You know, that you could just jump in. Okay, I missed issue 1, but it's all right. No, I have no idea. Like, this blonde 13-year-old girl shows up, and I guess, to this guy's door because her parents are dead. And based on the way they named her and the fact that she can see a lot of paranormal stuff, they think, you know, she could be the Antichrist, which makes no real sense.
No, it's not for a good Antichrist book.
Right. Her ghost grandmother visits her every once in a while and tells her things.
Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
Hugs her in,
like,
her sleep.
And the guy is trying to figure out where, because there's all these weird, like, the just to give you an idea, the second book starts basically with, and also it starts really weird, like, someone is explaining something. It's almost like they're retelling this story that you're reading,
mm-hmm.
but it starts out really weird. So the guy and his partner are at somebody's apartment, and they're worried that, because I guess vampires and stuff, it's okay as long as it's consensual. Like, if you're allowed to feed on the person,
right?
It's okay. But their aspects of being patrolling this is to make sure that, you know, the whatever convention or whatever law that was put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Right here is that no one's breaking the cusp agreements established for the city, such as no draining of people who don't want to be drained. And, like, through the door, you hear, like, this person saying, like, F off, basically, but it's, like, really weirdly spelled. And that's another thing I don't like. There's two different people in here that have hugely weird accents.
Yeah.
And it's written out that way, so it takes you forever to try and understand what it is you're reading for those people.
Right.
But so they basically go back and forth, and he kicks the door in, and it's basically some vampire on her period. And it's like, just what? What? How is this, like, really weird? And I guess, like, I don't know if it's like she's stuck in that because that's when she got turned or something.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know. It just was a kind of, I don't know. I just didn't like it. It was like, I don't understand this. And of course, that's the thing. I don't want to be like, it's garbage. You know, just because I don't understand it doesn't mean it's bad.
Right.
But I couldn't get into it, basically, is what I'm saying.
Right.
You know, and like I said, at issue 2, if it's still not explaining the concept very well, then that seems like not the greatest storytelling. But that's just me.
That's kind of how I feel about my first pick.
Okay.
So my first pick is Welcome Back, number 1, by Selba and Sawyer. And so this book, it's just very weird. It's like two people are telling this story. There's, like, some crazy war going on at the beginning. And then it cuts to, like, this emo chick who's just kind of, like, you know, bumming around. And then she goes back to her apartment. And she, like, burns, like, a bunch of weird stuff. And then, like, sleeps with her boyfriend. And, like, the whole time, you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, like, what's going on, like, and there's, like, these weird flashbacks, and, like, you find out, like, her dad was this, like, crazy dude, and then she, like, stabs her boyfriend while they're sleeping, and then it cuts to this, like, other girl who's, like, a ninja.
Okay.
And then they go to this house party, and then, you know, the ninja chick's, like, beating up some dude, and, like, like, all this craziness is going on, and, like, then they're on, like, a train, and they fight, and the emo chick runs away, and then, like, she comes back in her house, and there's this little kid talking to her dog, and she's like, nope, it's me, it's your stepdad, like, I've possessed your sister, whatever. And, so, it's very, I read it twice, and I still don't understand what is actually going on in this book.
Wow.
But the art is awesome. I will say that. The art is very, very good. I'm going to give it another issue to see if it explains it a little more, because I feel it was, like, a very crazy act one. Like, okay. You know, you ever see those shows where it's, like, a pilot and you have no idea what's going on? Kind of like, yeah. Battlestar.
Okay.
When they restarted Battlestar, it was kind of like, crap tons of war and all kinds of ships flying everywhere, but you don't know what's actually going on. And then, like, three episodes later, it's like, oh, it's a Cylon war, and they're these guys. And you're like, oh, okay, now I'm in.
All right.
So it was very weird. The art was super good, so I'm going to give it, like I said, I'm going to give it one more, see how it goes. But, like, it was, like, I had a hard time following.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my opinion on that one.
So that's two for two, then. That's not,
yeah,
not good.
It's going to get better.
Right.
Yeah. I think.
Well, I think we're both going from worst to best. So I know I am.
Okay.
So my middle of the road choice for this week, Secret Wars number 5 by Marvel.
Middle of the road.
Jonathan Hickman, Asad Ribic.
Rybick, something like that. I don't know.
I'm just really not feeling this whole Secret Wars title. It just makes no sense to me. It's like, it's really nothing like Secret Wars, which I, you know, okay, they're not trying to just redo it, but...
Right.
You know, the whole Doom created this new battle world, and I just don't understand that. Like, why... That's the one thing. Like, if I was there and I would confront Doom, I'd be like, how does this make sense to you? You know, you're supposed to be a super genius. Why splicing together all these ridiculous worlds where this weird junk is happening?
Right.
How is that not volatile to you? We all know that basically, supposedly, in all these different fictions we've read, like The Matrix and stuff.
Right.
If you give everyone exactly what they want, it blows up in their face because no one, like, actually knows how to be happy.
Right.
You know, so you have to flaw things slightly, you know, for them to believe it.
Right.
But this is, like, completely in the other direction. It's like they're all flawed. They're all, like, weird worlds. And so the core title, you know, Strange is dead. You know, Doom killed Doctor Strange because he was finally, you know, Strange and Doom are the only ones that remembered how things were.
Right.
And Strange is, like, once the two ships opened and those small batches of heroes and villains that also remembered how things were came out.
Right.
Strange is like, oh, we got to... This is not going to work. So, you know, we're going to have to put it back or whatever. And Doom just kills him. And now his daughter, who's actually, you know, Reed Richards' daughter, but doesn't remember that.
No, Valeria, like, actually is Doom and Sue's daughter from another universe.
Oh, okay.
Like, she's that. Like from a parallel universe.
Oh, and they were brought in, and she brought into the 616, and then, okay.
Yep.
So, okay, so her daughter is, like, head of, you know, basically almost head of security. So, and she was, he's like, you know, I want you to find these people, but I don't want you to question. You know, he almost yells at her. It's like, you can't ask, just do what I say and find them and stop them. That's
right.
It. And, you know, her being her, she's like, okay, Dad. And then she goes to her team and she's like, yeah, screw that. I want to know answers. I want to know what's going on, why these people are so important, you know?
Right.
Why their signals are different and stuff like that. And so, and she's like, I want to know what they're capable of. And then it shows, like, you know, Thanos and all this. And so I just don't get it. And, like, we just learned that Marvel is extending this by an issue. So it's now going to be 9 issues instead of 8.
Right.
So I don't think even they know where they're going with this. And they're like, we need, because there's already been
delays.
It's
not that it's already delayed or anything.
Yeah. And so it's like, well, we need to, and it's just, the last big batch of Marvel crossover titles were, you know, Civil War and Secret Invasion, you know, all those big ones I enjoyed so much.
Well, and AVX. And then
AVX was decent. I enjoyed that.
I liked Civil War. I liked Initiative. I liked Secret Invasion. AVX was good. There was another one in between, though, that I didn't really care
for. Remember.
Axis, I didn't really care for.
I didn't read Axis, but it seemed kind of weird.
Oh, like Heroes Unite or Heroes Reborn or Heroic Age? It was Heroic Age, was followed.
That was the actual
Secret
crossover.
War.
Oh, okay.
And then there was something else. There was another crossover in between, but I cannot remember what it is for the life of me. And it's going to bother me, probably. But, obviously it wasn't worth remembering.
Yeah.
Spider
Island, does that count?
Spider Island was a crossover in just the Spider books.
Okay, but the other characters were in it, but yeah, it was not.
Right.
Largely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and that was pretty good. Like,
it was
the
okay.
core book was really good. Mm-hmm. So, like, I feel with Marvel, the core books tend to be really good for the crossover.
Normally, but this one, I can't say that with this.
Like, I think it's just, for me, it's Hickman. Like, I just can't deal. Like, I just don't do Hickman well. Mm-hmm. Like, he just, you know, just really is something that I can't.
Yeah, the artwork's
can't
good,
get into. I, you know,
the whole story, the premise of this whole giant thing, I just
Dr.
can't
Doom,
get behind.
Doctor Doom, the Beyonder.
Yeah.
Wonder right. Doom. Beyond Doom.
Right, Beyond Doom.
Beyond Doom. I just want them to, like, I want that to be a t-shirt. Beyond Doom. The more you know.
Yeah. The Beyond Doomer.
Yes. All right, so my next book is Wonder Woman 43. So I picked this book because A, I like this storyline. A lot of people are giving Meredith Finch crap. I really like what she's doing with this. But it's the first issue that Dave Finch is not on the book. Instead, Ian Churchill did the art. And even with the new, like, armor outfit. So, like, Chip and I got into this big argument at the bar one night over this outfit. And he hated it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I like it. Like, I don't really care. I think it's, you know, it's Wonder Woman, whatever. It's an armory outfit, whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it doesn't.
Looks fine.
Yeah, it looks fine. It doesn't matter. Maybe he just didn't like the way Dave Finch drew it.
Maybe.
But she also doesn't wear it all the time. like even though she wore it, she only wore, like, in the previous issue, she only wore it for like 3 pages, and then she was back to the other one.
Oh.
And well, she only wears it when she needs to.
Yeah.
But she is a actual god of war now, mm-hmm. so you would think that she would need actual armor that's not just a leotard.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was pretty funny. But in the book, like, so Donna disappeared out of the prison after killing a whole bunch of dudes on Theramecia, and Strife set her loose in London. So Donna's, like, wandering around London. Here she is, like, flashbacking to killing a bunch of dudes because the witches told her to. So then she goes into this other, like, she goes into a bar that is the three witches. Like,
of the fates?
The three fates. And so they're like, you don't have a timeline. Like, you don't have this, that, and the other thing. And, like, so, like, the story's still going on. It's very, very good. And, you know, Wonder Woman shows up and some cool stuff happens. It's kind of a filler. But, like, it's still good. Like, mm-hmm. I don't hate it. But I don't think the art is any... like, any worse or better than...
It looks good to me.
Finch, yeah. Like, it's still cool. Like, there's a lot of action toward the end where Odysseus's grandson shows up on a Pegasus trying to shoot her down with golden arrows and become the god of war himself. Like, it's kind of neat, like, the idea behind it.
Yeah.
And then she starts, like... She gets hit with an arrow. She starts bleeding blood, and she's like, I'll show you god of war. Like, it's pretty cool. Like, that's how it ends. It's a good book. It's good filler. I wanted to talk about it because it was, you know, not David Finch art, but I wanted to see if the story was still just as good with different art. I actually like David Finch's art better.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just flows with the story better, but I still like Ian Churchill. It's cool to see him going out and doing some stuff, and it's cool to see, like, Donna Troy coming back into the DCU, is
right.
what they're calling it, YOU DCU.
Okay.
So it's kind of cool. I like it. You know, it's... If you've read the book so far from, like, where the New 52 picked up 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever,
right.
It's still just as good. Like, the Azzarello stuff was awesome. And I actually just had a conversation with somebody about this in Butler about that Azzarello run, where, like, the first two issues were, like, really hard to get through, but if you read it in a trade, or you read more than, like, 3 or 4 issues at a time, it was, like, sucking you in.
Oh, okay.
So that's pretty much what happened. I really enjoy it. Check out Wonder Woman number 43.
Nice.
So also found out Meredith Finch wrote stuff for Grimm Fairy Tales. She wrote the Little Mermaid storyline.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Jen was telling us about that, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so my final book.
Final book.
Is final book from our friends at Action Lab.
Read.
Princeless, what?
Read. Final book. Read.
Princeless Raven, the Pirate Princess.
Princess.
Number two.
The Pirate.
Yeah, Princeless. Yeah, okay. Raven, the Pirate.
I didn't
princess.
Hear the L. I thought you just said Princess.
No.
Yes. Okay.
Well, the second one is.
Right.
Okay.
I didn't hear it the first time. It's cool. Sorry.
That's all right.
I digress.
Shut your mouth. let's see here.
Can I just say how much I like the art in that book?
The art's pretty nice, yeah. And I'm trying to figure out where it says. So it's Whitley and Higgins and Brandt are the creators of this one. So now I don't know exactly what the, because I think this is like a separate title, because there's Princeless, which is on a couple, and this is the pirate version, basically.
Yeah, I think this is like an offshoot mini.
Okay. Because
they do a lot of like mini series.
Oh. I actually, just based on number two, I'm hoping it goes on, not just a mini, because it's funny. It's like you follow, it starts out with the, you know, the pirate king is like taking over a ship, and he sends his daughter to go get something in the cabin. And then like it flashes forward, because it's like that was kind of like her dream. She was remembering it.
Right.
Because she's all banged up in bed with like a big bandage on her head. And then there's this redhead next to her, like sitting there. So, oh, finally you're awake. You know, I was worried, you know, I might have killed you, you know. And
whoops.
She's like, oh, it's you. How did you, you know, and they basically kind of begrudgingly give each other compliments. Like, I never fought anybody as tough as you. And she's like, well, I never fought anybody as fast as you. How are you doing? How do you do that wall thing? And she's like, oh, I'm half elf. I can, you know, do jumping and speed really well. And she's like, half elf isn't a thing. And she's like, well, tell that to my mom and dad. You know, it's like my mom was an elf and my dad was a
dude,
human.
Regular dude.
Yeah. And so they kind of talk.
Joe,
she's
elf
like,
lover.
Yeah, and she's bringing her up to speed. Like, you know, why am I here? What happened? And
right.
But she's actually in, not a safe house, but the house of someone she knew from childhood. This guy's, like, cooking her breakfast. And, you know, it's this old dude, older. And he's got, like, a young, late teens-ish daughter, it looks like, who's, like, really into studying and alchemy, it looks like. Because, you know, they're like, oh, it's so good to see you, this and that. And there's a lot of, I mean, nothing major storyline necessarily, but good dialogue. Just fun. It's interesting.
Right.
You're reading it. And it's like, oh, this is like people would talk.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that this girl, the black-haired one, I guess they're implying that she's Asian. Doesn't like to jump out at me, but like some of her ancestors that from the one page are.
Okay.
So she comes from a line of pirate queens. But what happened was her father.
So like, she's a princess pirate.
Yeah. So her mother like disappeared. So her father took over as pirate king.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be the first daughter is always becomes the new queen.
Right.
Well, her two brothers kept feeding her dad stories from like other kingdoms and how they treat their princesses and blah, blah, blah. When it's the whole stereotypical lock her in a tower with a dragon.
Right.
You know. And
yeah.
So she's rescued. And she's like, oh, I trust my dad. He'd never do something like that until he did it.
Oh.
And like he locked her away, which is like basically present day, and that's how she escaped.
Right.
Fought the redhead, and so the redhead took her here, and so now she's like, well, now I want revenge. I'm gonna go back, and the older dude's like, oh, wait a second, are you talking about killing? She's like, no, it's my brothers. I'm not gonna kill them.
Right.
I'm just gonna go and take back what's mine and humiliate them. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. I'm in. I'll help you. You know.
Right. Right.
And so he runs like a tavern, and you're gonna need a pirate crew. Like, she knows some stuff, but she doesn't know how to really, like, she kind of knows how to run a ship, but she can't do it herself.
Right.
So, it's really funny, because it's real heavy, like, the bar scene is very heavy feminism, not the book,
mm-hmm.
but it's done in a funny way, like, almost. So, you're almost kind of questioning whether it's making fun of the men or making fun of the feminists, because it's, like, stereotypes from recent, like, couple years of, like, you know, fake gamer girl and stuff like that. Like, there's a dude that says, like, I don't think you're a real pirate girl, you know. Like,
right.
You know, and, like, all these guys keep coming up, and they're all just like, oh, you know, I could teach you how to do this, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, next, you know, and she's getting pissed. And the redhead is actually, like, a dancer. And so she's like, well, look, whenever I'm done on stage, I'll come and help thin this line out for you. And she's like, oh, okay, thanks. Like, I don't understand why all the guys are worthless or just sleazy. And this one little dude's like, hey, not all men. And like, she grabs him by the ear. It's like, listen, you, nobody wants to hear your shit. Get out of here, you know.
What?
Matriarch, you know.
That's awesome.
Guy. He's like, oh, help, I'm being oppressed by the matriarchy. You know, it's like, wow. Just really timely, honestly. Like, you know. And then she's like watching the girl dance, and she's like really impressed. She's like, wow. And then this other person sits down and is like kind of like interviewing, because they've all been interviewing for the business to help out.
Mm-hmm.
And she's actually like, I'm here for injustice. A pirate's real place is to set right injustices to the poor and underprivileged and whatever. And she's like, next. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I understand. You know, I respect your decision. Best luck. And she's like, whoa, wait, what? Like, she wasn't actually listening. She's like, wait, what did you say again? And then she's like, oh, injustice. And wait, my ancestor, the Baroness, used to say that. And she's like, yeah, that's where I learned it. Like, I've been studying, you know, all this stuff. And so it's this blonde who wants to join her thing. And so she's like, oh, you're perfect for what I want. Mm-hmm. You know, and then she's like, oh, I bet. And then the redhead comes back. It's like, maybe you should just do like an all-girl crew, you know. And like, well, how would we do that? And the blonde's like, oh, actually, me and my guild, you know, would probably a lot of them would love that. She's like, you have a guild? Yeah. And it's really funny because now she goes off and talks about how she has like a D&D campaign. In like, they don't call it that, but she's like, it's like, well, it started out as a book club. Then I started running a game Friday nights. And it turned out like a lot more of the girls were into the stuff I was too. Right. And then it's like, and she's like, what kind of game? And it's like, it's a sort of post-catastrophic sword and sorcery dungeon crawler. I run a level 27 Squirrelian War Chief.
Oh, my God.
And the best part is the captain says, like, I don't understand, like, half of the words you're saying, and I think the other half you're not using correctly. But it's just really funny. And then so, like, you know, there's this big barroom brawl, of course, because there has to be.
That's awesome.
And then the final girl that you can see is, like, part of the main crew.
Right.
Is like upstairs because, you know, she's still reading, and then there's like all the big crash, and one of her experiments falls because they're thudding around downstairs in the tavern. And she's like, all right, that's it. She goes down with her bag and she's like, God damn it. You know, like, she's this ball and she's just like, hang on. And she just like throws this thing down and it lights this ring of fire around her. And she's like, ooh, I am Jayla the Dark, Eater of Soul. Like, she's totally like being like stupid about it.
Like, that's awesome.
I will kill you. And they're like, oh, she's a witch, run for it. And like, she clears the place out.
Right.
And you can see that, you can tell she's totally going to join up. And I really, really enjoyed it. It's a fun title. If you're familiar with like Rat Queens, it's got the same kind of vibe.
Well, that's
Rat
cool.
Queens, only this is like pirates, whereas Rat Queens is actually like a D&D campaign.
Yeah.
So I totally will be checking this out in trade when it hits. Princeless. Raven the Pirate Princess.
Yes.
And it's Action Lab. You know, check them out, and I think you guys enjoy it.
It's awesome. All right, my next book is actually number 2 of 5. It's a weekly book. It's the Doctor Who Four Doctors Mini, by Ian Nunes and Comic Craft. So the first book was really awesome, and I was like, oh, well, if the second book's really awesome, I'm going to talk about it. And it was awesome.
Okay.
So let me just start out by the, I'm going to read you the crazy little fun recap, because they always do these like cool things in these books. So it's like this like weird, funky drawing, and it's all from Clara's perspective, and
it looks
she's like
Lost Planet.
Yeah. It's kind of like that. Yeah. So it's like, when the Doctor first told me about his other selves, I imagined they'd be, you know, like from the from a parallel universe, or just, you know, younger or older. When he talked about the meeting, I thought, hey, BFFs. I mean, you meet you're going to be understanding, right? You're going to be treating yourself with kindness. Another cup, old me? Why, thank you, original universe me. Yeah, that's what I thought. Not so much. So then it cuts to a scene where, like, okay, so the
artwork changes to, like, good.
The current. Yeah. So the 10th, 11th, and 12th Doctors with their three companions are, like, have this chance meeting in 1920s France in a diner that, if they meet in this diner, will cause all of time to end. So, which is set up by these guys that are, like, part of the Time War that escaped the fall of Gallifrey. So when a fixed point in time happens like this, Reapers come to destroy everything and set time correct again and wipe it out of existence. So the Reapers are, like, flying everywhere. All the companions are freaking out. All the Doctors are, like, making fun of each other because, like, all the Reapers are running after the 10th Doctor and the 12th Doctor's, or sorry, the 11th Doctor. And the 12th Doctor's like, why him? I'm the hardest to digest, and you're the freshest thing on the menu. And David Tennant Doctor is like, does he often say things without listening to himself first? And Claire's just like, all the time. So, by the way, if you're a Doctor Who fan, this book takes place before 11th Doctor, Matt Smith Doctor, has met Clara.
Okay.
But after the Time War 50th anniversary episode.
Okay.
So, it's kind of interesting. So, like, the Matt Smith Doctor just keeps running. He just keeps running and taking the Reavers with him. And they're like, I don't know why they're following him. Let's go to the TARDIS. So they open the door to the TARDIS, and it's a real phone booth. And they're like, that's not good. So they figure out a way to like one doctor has to touch the other doctor to touch the other doctor in like a sequence, like just like on the shoulder to reactivate, to like send a certain kind of pulse wave into the TARDIS and reset it so they can go in there.
Okay.
So then it gets even better. So the Reapers are, or the Reavers are trying to like plow into the TARDIS, like they're trying to break in. So they all run in there, and the David Tennant doctor's just like, the Master's TARDIS, I should have known. And the 12th doctor, the Peter Capaldi doctor's like, this is my TARDIS. And he's like, so why all the Dalek bumps? And he's just like, I told you. So then they like keep running, and they keep running back. They run back to the 11th Doctor's TARDIS. They run back to the 12th Doctor's TARDIS, or the 10th Doctor's TARDIS. And when they get to him, like, the 12th Doctor makes fun of him for not being original and just keeping the 9th Doctor's TARDIS the same. Because that, like, they used it for one season, and then it didn't change. And then it kind of changed toward the end, but not a lot. Mm-hmm. As where when Matt Smith took over, it changed a lot. And then when Peter Capaldi took over, it changed even more. Mm. So they're still trying to break through the side of the TARDIS, and he, like, they pull this lever, and it separates all three TARDISes into to their own thing, killing all of the Reapers. And then they land on this planet afterwards, after they look at this photo of where it's supposed to end up. So they're all, like, in their perspective TARDISes, like, talking, and they're just, like, like, the Matt Smith one's like, I think I might actually win the least silly doctor contest. And his companion's like, weirdly, yeah. So they all show up on the same planet, and they're like, they're looking at the picture, and they're like, well, as long as we don't do this, we'll be fine. So then somebody shoots at them out of nowhere, and they all bust out their screwdrivers, and they're like, oh, no, we got to figure it out. And then they have, like, the companions are all like, guys, stop. You're gonna be the photo. Guys, stop. And then they get exactly into the photo thing, and you see, like, the crazy lord from the Time War that's not a Gallifreyan, like, ready to come in and kill them even more. He's trying to destroy them all. The conquest of Vord. The Vord is the species. And then they do, like... So, like, then it's being continued into the next series. And it's 5 issues. It's really, really fun. If you like Doctor Who, it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds like
it. And this is the one that started on Doctor Who Day. It will end right before the show premieres on the 15th. So, at the end of each book, they either do something with, like, a Doctor Who, like, the Titan mystery guy style thing. Yeah. And they have, like, a little, like,
word
cut.
Bubbles
and, yeah, word bubbles and, like, a little cartoon. This one happens to be, like, a little one-page cartoon called Open Mic Night. That I will read to you because it is hilarious. So it starts out with David Tennant. Thanks, you've been a great audience. Yeah, bit too great, if I'm honest. Don't get the applause thing very often. Don't quite trust it. Anywho, please give it up for the comedy stylings of the next me, apparently. Because he doesn't trust them because he doesn't know for sure that that's really him.
Okay.
Or the next version. And so Matt Smith gets up. He's like, ah, yes, is this on? Funny thing happened to me on the way here. But that's only to be expected, isn't it? Given my lifestyle, the odd thing about observational comedy is it doesn't work if we're all different. So it shouldn't be, but it does. A bit worrying if you don't think about it. Thank you. Good night. And then, like, the Peter Capaldi one, like, opens the curtain. He's like, what are you doing? Because he's, like, kind of grumpy old man.
Yeah.
So he sits down and goes, a man walks into a police phone box. Ow. It's like crickets. It's like, I set it up. Then the surprise reverse expectations. Textbook stuff. Come on, people. Can we try karaoke? I've heard it's delicious. And he just throws the mic.
Okay.
So it's really funny. Like, if you get Doctor Who humor, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like these guys at Titan have been putting out this book for, oh my God, like a year now, year and a half. And it's just awesome. Like, they're just probably some of the best writing that I've seen for the Doctor in general. Like, they take a lot from Moffat, they take a lot from Davies, and they really spice it up and hit it up well.
Nice.
So, cool. So we have a lot of new stuff this week. I'm not really going to go over because it was a huge week. Mm-hmm. But if you want to check it out, ndcomics.com and the new release tag.
Okay.
Every Monday updates. Check it out.
Get a feel for what you want to look for.
Yeah. Or call the store, email them, whatever. Hold it. Put it in your pull box. Start a pull box. Whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cool stuff. Like, I walked the wall when I got here today, and I did my pull. Like, I checked the double check my pull because I missed one thing, and your face was priceless. And you're like, "Is that your pull?" And I'm like, "Yeah."
Big,
it's like
huge 25
books. I'm like, "Man." So, all right. So today is August 28th.
Mm-hmm.
Today is Jack Kirby's 99th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So if he were alive today, he would be 99 years old.
Wow.
For those of you who don't know who Jack Kirby is, shame on you.
Right.
Why
are you listening to this?
Right. Right. He has created pretty much every major character.
Co-created. Right.
Every major character. So I found this website's like the top 10 Kirby books or Kirby characters. And it's on Multiversity Comics. I thought it was a pretty cohesive list. So we're going to talk about these real quick. Because it's pretty cool.
Okay.
Also, if you are so inclined. So the Kirby family also donates to the Heroes Initiative,
mm-hmm.
Which helps freelance writers and creators that may not, like, you know, maybe their house burns down and they didn't have enough insurance to cover stuff. Like, that's what it helps out.
Mm-hmm.
It helps specifically those kind of guys. So if you haven't donated to it, go for it. If not, and you're going to be at, like, Baltimore, a lot of those guys take donations there. You can donate online. All right. So, first character, Devil Dinosaur. So, Devil Dinosaur, Moon Boy. Have you ever read any of those?
I know Devil Dinosaur because he's in the new in Future Imperfect.
Yeah.
Cap. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Moon Boy's, like, just, like, a little
ape
guy. Yeah. He's, like, a primitive dude. And Devil Dinosaur just basically wreaks havoc everywhere. He's awesome. I've always enjoyed a good Devil Dinosaur story because he's always, like, in the wrong place. Like, they always put him in, like, the weirdest situations, and he just, like, you know, ends up wrecking house. So the next one is pretty big. Specific, like, and there's things that we'll also talk about after the top 10 if they're not included in this. But Magneto is number 9.
Okay.
You know, he created the biggest villain the X-Men has ever seen.
Right.
And, you know, he had his own island. He has kids. He has grandkids. He's been a good guy, a bad guy, a good guy, a bad guy, a good guy, a bad guy, a leader of an island. He's had an asteroid. Mm-hmm. You know, he brought back Kitty Pride in the giant bullet that she faced through the world.
And we're talking about Magneto, not Jack Kirby, by the way.
Right. So. Right.
Jack Kirby didn't live on an island. And
so, and Jack Kirby's got, like, a really distinctive style, too. So, like, if you've seen any of these books in, like, the 40s, 50s, like, you're seeing, like, Jack Kirby style. And a lot of people...
Is it okay if I blaspheme and say I'm not a huge Kirby fan?
Really?
Yeah, I've never... I'm not a fan of his style.
Huh.
So that's like, oh, what are you doing? It's like,
no.
It's fine. I don't like it.
No.
It's
everybody's entitled to their style, but...
Yeah.
Like, or their own opinion, but, like, the reason I like it is because he kind of set a standard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like when you listen to like Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath, and then you listen to like 80s metal bands, and then you listen to 90s metal bands, mm-hmm. and you listen to now metal bands, and you can hear the influence through those.
Right.
You can see his influence through the decades of comics,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and he got to do them first.
Well, that's
so
huge, yeah.
Yeah, so it's very cool to, like, see, you know, what his
take... I mean, he's the one that decided, you know, the color schemes and what they would look like. So,
like,
that's totally important.
The iconic stuff that you see. All right, so number 8 is the Silver Surfer.
Mm-hmm.
And they show this really awesome sketch, and it is probably one of the best Silver Surfers I've ever seen in my life. Like, I actually prefer Kirby's stuff in black and white.
Yeah, it does seem to work a little better in black and white. I'll admit that.
I never thought, like, similar to what you're saying, like, I think his coloring was weird, but I loved, like, his black and white. Like, it's amazing. the detail is awesome. Like, you know, the muscle detail, like the how his lines are, mm-hmm. You know, and like his use of black lines is awesome. And I actually had a discussion with Tom Scioli about that last time he was out here, who is the biggest Kirby fan ever, mm-hmm. and his style is super similar to Kirby. And it's very, very cool. All right, number seven is a big one. Galactus. Mm-hmm. So I was like looking at Facebook today, and people are posting like pictures and stuff. There's a picture of Galactus where he's like, "Happy birthday, King Kirby." Mm-hmm. And someone posted, "I never understood why Galactus wore the part under his helmet around his chin." And all I wanted to say was like, maybe it was so it didn't fly off his face when he was flying through space.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, he's Galactus. He's ginormous.
Yeah, he can just wear what he wants.
Yeah. I would be more weirded out by the kilt. Okay. Commandy is another one.
Never heard of that one.
The last boy on Earth. And he's like in a world. This is a DC book. He's like the last dude on Earth. And he has like a friend who's a tiger.
That's cool.
Yeah. And they actually showed up. Kind of. But they showed up for the first time in a long time in Multiversity.
Oh, really?
And they found this temple, and they found a Multiversity book, and they're reading through it. And it's a guidebook, and it's the one that tells you about all the different worlds. Hmm. It was really, really good. I was like, is that Commandy? Oh, my God, it is Commandy. All right, the next one's the Demon. And
also
like
from DC, yeah.
Yeah, and you look at it, and like this is like more modern coloring on Kirby art, and it looks really good. It looks very, very nice. So that's why I say I think depending on the colorist,
yeah,
it's different. But this art is just, it's phenomenal. Like his use of shadowing and tone is just so good. So good. Guardian from DC is the next one on there. I don't really think he's one of the greatest creations. He's kind of like, I think he's kind of a throwaway character, but this is me. Number three is the Celestials.
That's pretty cool.
That's huge. Because these guys basically just, you know, they're the omnipotent beings of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, they do. They're responsible for a lot.
Right. All right, number two is a pretty big name, too. The Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when you think about the fact that he did Fantastic Four 1. Mm-hmm. He's the very first guy to ever draw Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Like, that is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he set the precedence of like what the thing would be forever.
Yeah, right.
It's just a very cool idea, and like I can just imagine what like him and Stan Lee were like just chilling out there.
Yeah.
And number one is the New Gods. So like for DC, so Orion, the High Father, like all those guys, and then in addition to that, like the Infinity Men. Or Infinity Man, like, all came out of there, too.
Okay.
Because they're all part of that, like, that higher being different realm in the DCU where they use, like, the boom tubes.
Okay.
And the mother boxes, and they, you know, go like that. It's pretty sweet. So, to add in here as well, not only did he get to do Magneto, he did the X-Men.
Right.
Like, he created the freaking X-Men with Stan Lee. Like how cool would that be to just be like, you know what? I have this weird idea.
Yeah.
I want to do this. And you're just like, all right. And Jack's just like, let me light my cigar and I will draw this up for you. But also people have to remember that he did the first cover with Amazing Spider-Man on it.
Yeah.
He did Amazing 15.
So now that's where I want to touch on this. Now, with all the constant arguments about this, how is Spider-Man not number one, or at least on the list? Because everyone wants to say that he created it, co-created it with Stan Lee, so why isn't it?
Because he didn't do the interior.
Okay, so then
he
how?
Only d- like,
hold all on, he did was the cover.
Up. He did the cover, but let me pull it up here so you can see it.
Oh, I know the cover. I mean,
I mean, who did the interiors?
Oh.
I don't want to get this wrong. but, like, his cover was so iconic that it's just like, you know, the cover came first and then the rest of the book for that book specifically. One second. Fantasy. Boop. he just like blew everyone away mm-hmm. by what he wanted to do with it. So,
and here's another question along those lines for everything, really. It doesn't matter about Kirby, you know, Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, those right. the big three. How, I mean, it's iconic now, you know, because it's standing the test of time and it created something huge. You can't really say it's actually, iconic this at like, the time.
This looks like he did the interior as well, but he only did 15.
Okay.
Like, so he did the first appearance of Spider-Man ever.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. it's like that very first issue.
Like, man, he's the one that made the webs between the arms yeah. and stuff like that. That's which comes and goes depending on who's drawing it, you know. It actually kind of went a lot. Like it was
went a lot because it like well in the beginning he would use it to glide. Mm-hmm. And like so he'd like swing way up and he'd be swinging, and they'd be like, oh, I'm gonna glide down.
Which so I like that they gave that to Spider-Man 2099. You know?
Right, I agree. And the cape yeah. was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I think its usefulness went out like mm-hmm. where you know, he didn't really need to glide. He just
yeah.
swung to a wall and stuck right. there and then yeah. you know, shot webs. But to create something that's cool, he also did, like, Incredible Hulk and Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's like, you ever seen Mallrats?
I have not.
It's this great scene where, like, well, they meet Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, oh, my God, you're Stan Lee. You created this guy and this guy and this guy. And he's like, yes, yes, yes. Yes. I can only imagine, like, somebody walking up to King Kirby and just being like, just, like, you, oh, my God, man, you drew this guy for the first time. That must have been amazing. He was probably just like, it was Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know? Well, and to these guys, it's weird because, like, even guys, like I've had conversations with, like, Ron Frenz and, you know, George Perez and a couple guys like that where I was like, well, what was it like when they were like, we're going to kill this guy? And they're like, it was Tuesday, you know, like Marv just came in and said, here's the script. You know, it was just really weird. It was like it wasn't a big deal. Like they were just like, well, no, it's just work. You know,
especially then for nothing, if nothing else back then, you know, and Stan Lee has said this 1,000 times in different interviews. He didn't consider it a real job. I mean, he was right. just paying bills. He wanted to be, you know, the next great American novelist.
Right.
And here he is writing some kiddie books. So he just, like, was pumping out this junk left and right. And he's like, whatever, sure. This character can shoot beams from his eyes. This one can do that. And,
right.
you know, I'm sure Kirby was the same way. It was like an expression. He was able to be creative. But it was just, they were just drawing cartoons. So I don't think, it took out, like, years before I think any of them would have realized the impact they were having with these characters,
right?
You know, and then now Stan Lee's all proud of what he's done, but at the time, probably a good 5 years, he was like, whatever, I just yeah. do stuff
until the mid-70s, like early 70s, early right. 80s. He was probably like, man, whatever, the funny books,
yeah,
yeah.
You know, probably didn't I think he even mentioned in a couple of interviews where he didn't like to tell people what he did for a living, he said something
yeah.
else,
yeah,
you know, and it's like, so to us, it's like, oh my God, you created all these guys. It must have been so awesome that,
right.
that sitting there listening to you, and it was probably just like
nope, Tuesday.
Worse than this. You know, it's yeah. probably just like, how about a dude that can like stick his tongue out real far?
Right.
Let's call him Toad. Yeah. You know, it's just like whatever, right. you know.
Or we're gonna make this guy, he can control the weather. You know what? Let's make him a girl.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Still, right.
You know, and they just yeah. freaking, you know, like flip through the encyclopedia, picking out like
right,
animals and
right.
stuff.
We're gonna call this guy Angel. Maybe he should have these big wings.
You're right.
Yeah. Like or like the Beast. Like that had to be a weird one though.
Yeah.
Because he didn't look like a beast yet.
No, he was just like a big wrestler.
Big dude, yeah.
His oversized hands and feet. That was
yeah. it. So it was weird. But like the other thing is like you have to imagine like so this one in a lifetime chance of these two guys
mm-hmm,
getting together at the just right time and doing these books
and feeding off each other's creativity
yeah.
to make something that will last almost
millennia probably
yeah, like you know
yeah.
through most of human history
like they completely changed people's lives for generations
mm-hmm.
like you know now when people think of you know, the good guy. They think of superheroes,
mm-hmm.
and those guys help set precedents as to what those guys are. And I mean, DC was doing it for a while before.
Absolutely.
But, like, dude, Kirby, he helped invent freaking Captain America.
Yeah.
Like,
and here's a great thing that I think a lot of people will try and, like, not try and forget, but don't completely realize.
Right.
They'll, just like you said, oh, Batman and Superman were, you know, first. They were here.
Yeah.
But think about the creative team who? What else did like they make Gillen besides?
Kane, yeah.
Like, what else did they make besides Superman? Or, and the other pair made Batman. Yeah. This pair made the entire Marvel lineup basically for
these
like
guys
years
made
to
like
come.
18 different characters or 18 different titles.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like.
And
like they did the Avengers,
goodbyes, bad guys.
And then they teamed them up like the Avengers. Like they totally did that, and they did. They broke down walls. They made these characters relatable. Mm-hmm. Like it, it was a completely different thing. And like, I feel that if it was anybody else, it would not have done it the same.
I agree. I totally agree with that.
And I think Kirby's art was perfect for it.
Mm-hmm.
I've also like I've heard some like great stories about like how awesome of a dude he was. In fact, I remember this time last year, I was walking into the mills, and I followed Jim Steranko on Twitter, and he was like, it was the Sunday before, or his birthday was on a Sunday, like Kirby's birthday was on a Sunday, and he like every Sunday, Jim Steranko just like tweets stories for like a couple hours, he just like he just does a couple sentences, tweet.
Oh wow!
So like. His whole night was just stories about King Kirby.
Wow.
And it was like really awesome. But it's just so cool to think about a character, like a creator like that. And like the fact that, you know, he didn't know if like it's almost like a lot of the great composers, like, you know, they were all like, man, I work at a church, whatever.
Yeah.
And then like later it's like, or Van Gogh, like nobody thought he was worth anything until he died, and then after he died, everybody was like, "This guy's stuff's amazing."
And I think too, like, and this has been said, this has been thrown around for a while, like probably 5-10 years at least. I've heard this kind of analogy, but a lot of, and this isn't just like nerds saying this. I mean, this is like professors and you know doctorates and stuff like that who study human history and ancestry have. Compared and said that comic books are our Norse mythology.
Yeah.
You know, this is our, like, America, like, United States of America.
Yeah.
This is our version of folklore.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, they created our, you know, Norse gods,
like
and
our
and
Thors
and our
and
Odins
yeah,
and you know,
yeah, yeah.
Greek mythology and all that, which is impressive.
Yeah. I mean, like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, when people think of heroes, they don't think of, well, sometimes they think of Thor.
You're right.
But they think of Thor because of comic books, and movies, not because they think of Thor, the Norse god of thunder.
Yeah, absolutely,
unless it's Thursday,
right?
Because Thor's day,
right?
But it's definitely one of those things that like it's a whole like crazy thing, like to be one of those guys, like you know, like I met Frank Frazetta's granddaughter, right? Mm-hmm. And Frank Frazetta is like this, you know, acclaimed artist, huge painter, like amazing work. And I was like, if you don't mind me asking, like, what was he like? And she's like, he was Grandpa Frank. Mm-hmm. I showed up. He would go, you know, we'd go hang out in his workshop. He'd be painting. I'd sit on his lap, whatever. Like, that's just how he was. Like, he just worked all the time and he loved it. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, to know, like, I think the other thing is, like, to hear all these good stories about these people is to know that they're real people and they're not, like, these super uppity, like, oh, I created this guy, kiss my butt, you know?
Yeah,
no,
like, what's
they're
the ones that I don't like, the bandwagon, not bandwagon, but the, like, not Neil Gaiman. It was, like, that whole tier where it's, like.
Like, McFarlane and those. No. Well, because McFarlane was like that for a little bit, but then he totally chilled out.
Yeah, I think. I'm talking about, like, the true arrogant level ones. Like, the big three, the ones that, like, Watchmen, Sandman, like the ones that everyone.
So Neil Gaiman.
Okay, and then, well, what was
Alan Moore?
Alan Moore, that's like one of them. Yeah.
Alan Moore is just a grumpy old dude. Lives in Britain. He's just like.
Right. So it's like, that's the level and, you don't want.
Yeah. So yeah, it's, but I think that they're like, you took my work and you just like crapped on it because they like he wasn't like that until they did movies.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then when they started doing the movies of it, he was like, nope. to a degree, I hear Frank Miller's kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've read a lot of interviews with him now that he's like totally like changed how he is. And, you know, he wants to keep things real and keep things more calm. And he's learned to let creative license kind of happen, especially with like the Sin City movies.
Right.
Like he was on the set to help. But he wasn't like, oh, it needs to be like this. But he said what changed him was when, like, Jessica Alba and a couple of the actors would come up to him and be like, so here's the scene I'm doing. Why is this character like this? because there's no, like, it's not like a book series that you can kind of figure it out later.
Right.
You know, it was like, what's this like? And he was just like, this is crazy. And then he would, like, explain it, and they would just, like, he grew to be really good friends with that whole cast because of that. Mm-hmm. You know, and he was like this, just like a grand poobah.
Yeah,
you know?
That's awesome.
But, like, yeah, man, like guys, Stanley, Jack Kirby, like, they're all, like, they're the American heroes. Like, they're, you know, they're, like, I dare say, no, I'm not going to say it because I'm totally going to get yelled at for that. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
But it's definitely, like, they are the writers of Dream now. Mm. You know, they're the creators. They're the spinners of the myth. Mm. You know, it's definitely cool to live in an age now where also it's great to live in an age now where we have actually kept a lot of, we've taken steps to preserve a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, like a lot of the Gil Kane stuff or Bob Kane stuff.
Okay.
Where it's, like DC would just throw all that shit out.
Oh, right.
You know,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Burn it or whatever, or just give it to people. You know, like Marvel actually kept a lot of that stuff when they could.
Right.
Or the families kept it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool too. So.
Yep.
But go out there, donate to Heroes Initiative, absolutely. Kirby for Heroes. More on that if you have any questions about that, it's heroesinitiative.com. And it's a great, great charity to donate to. And like I said, if you go to like any of these bigger cons, like Baltimore for sure will have it, where you'll see like tip jars at all the artist booths, and they're for okay. Heroes Initiative, and you can just boop, there it is.
Nice, okay.
Yeah. Like I always like, even if I just go up to get something signed, I'm always like, here's $5, you know, mm-hmm. $10, $20, whatever I have.
Yeah.
You know, depending like if I'm getting like 5 books signed, whatever. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if they're nice.
Yeah, right, of course.
You know, and it's cool. Like, but Heroes Initiative, definitely a cool thing to go through. Happy birthday, King Kirby. Next year is 100 years old.
That's crazy.
Right? Or no, sorry. Actually, I think I said that wrong. I think he's 98 this year.
Oh, okay. Well, happy birthday.
Yeah. King happy Kirby, really, well. Happy really long birthday. Oh, no, sorry. I was right. Steve Ditko did the pencils inside Amazing Fantasy. He did the cover. Yeah. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to look it up now.
Kirby's up there drawing cartoons for God now.
Right. He's just like, hey, can you draw something funny with my son in it? Let me get my cigar.
Jesus riding Silver Surfer's board. God's like, that's awesome.
Right. Let's see. This might not actually tell me his birth date on here. Nope. Okay, 1917. So he's 98 this year. Sorry, my bad. I was thinking it was next year already.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. So, but still, 98.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a long huge. Time. Yeah, 2 years from now, it's gonna be some kind of crazy huge party.
Oh, I'm sure.
New York's gonna blow up. There's gonna be like people spray painting like Kirby. Fantastic Four art, like that'd Kirby awesome. Art everywhere.
That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be real cool, actually. If you're not doing that in New York, think about it.
Yes.
Think about it.
Or at least
your
make
hometown.
It, if you don't want to deface stuff. Make it a thing in Central Park where there's a giant canvas and everyone can come and just do tributes to Kirby. I think that would be awesome.
That'd be cool too. I'd be cool with like just like Kirby art, like Kirby style art covers on everything.
Mm.
You know, that'd be cool. Like for a whole month, like Marvel and DC both.
Yeah, that would
just
be great.
Do Kirby art, like or maybe it's old Kirby art.
Yeah,
just
why not?
Like pages, like just clips of Kirby art, like as covers.
Well, what not even like just redo like original Kirby art covers for like the ones that apply with the new title sequences and like stuff around it. So it's just like you know, Amazing Fantasy can be the Spider-Man issue of that time, and just
or maybe they have like other artists tribute
that
to him like that because they've done that before.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool too. So, all right, guys. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next
ramblings.
Time.
Bye.
Bye.